Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello, folks. Our Wimbledon coverage this year is sponsored by Local Tennis Leagues, the home of friendly, competitive tennis in the UK.
With over 10,000 players in local tennis leagues up and down the country, it's never been easier to find someone locally with a similar ability to have a hit with.
It really is tennis on your terms, competitive and with total control of when and where you play over 8-week rounds.
It's also a fun way to get fit, meet new people, make the most of your local park or tennis venue, and get those competitive juices flowing.
And it's absolutely open to all standards. You just need to be 18 or over to play.
So whether you're at the beginning of your tennis journey like me,
or a master on the court like me, there's something for everyone.
Once you're signed up, there's also the chance to win prizes, play for points, and receive a free tube of tennis balls just for playing your matches. You also get a host of other great benefits, including access to the Wimbledon ballot.
So what are you waiting for? Join Local Tennis Leagues today at www.localtennisleagues.com and use our exclusive checkout code WEEKLY50 in capitals for 50% off your £18 entry fee.
That's www.localtennisleagues.com, WEEKLY50 at the checkout. The link is in the description. So get ready to play some friendly,
competitive tennis
on a court near you.
Please take your seats quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Tennis Weekly with Joel and Kim on today's Wimbledon semi-finals catch-up, sponsored by Local Tennis Leagues.
Novak Djokovic reaches his 8th Wimbledon final.
Rafa withdraws with injury.
And Ons Jabeur will face off against Elena Rybakina in a battle of first-time slam finalists.
Kim, today is the 8th of July and we are here to catch up on the semi-finals at Wimbledon at Tennis Weekly HQ. Now, normally we would be catching up on all four matches across the men's and women's semi-finals in the singles draws, but unfortunately it's not the case. We've only got three matches to talk about, although there are a lot of still talking points to discuss with the non-match between Rafa and Kyrgios. But I think it's safe to say it's been a very dramatic last 24 hours, particularly for the Wimbledon men's draw.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't surprising when I heard the news that Rafa had withdrawn. I think, you know, we saw how much discomfort he was in during that quarterfinal against Taylor Fritz and how it was affecting his serve. And we knew that it was a possibility that he might withdraw ahead of the semi-final. And, you know, it was obviously a difficult decision for him to make. He doesn't do this without good reason. And ultimately, you know, he
hates it. He hates withdrawing.
He hates it. I mean, I think he's had 7 career walkovers in total for various reasons. You know, that's going back to like 2004. So it is once in a blue moon. And we know that he often plays with various ailments and, you know, will only withdraw if it is something super kind of difficult. And I mean, in this case, you know, he had a scan, I think, yesterday, which showed that there was a 7 millimeter tear in his abdomen, and that if he was to play on it, could be made a lot worse, and that would, you know, it would mean a long injury layoff. Whereas at the moment, it's kind of a 3 to 4 week recovery period as it is. So, you know, based on the fact that he didn't think he'd be able to play 1 or 2 5-set matches to win the title, and he had the risk of making it a lot worse, I think it's definitely the right decision. Although I know some people are unhappy that we've been denied that showdown with Kyrgios.
Yes, and we'll get onto that and all the kind of fallout from that match not happening. But Kim, I know that you were so much in denial about it. You've gone on a trip up north to the Lake District, little family holiday. Were you in that much despair after the Rafa withdrawal? You just wanted to get away from it all?
Yeah, I was. As soon as he announced that, I had that press conference, I was like, right, I'm off. I don't want to be anywhere near London. Can't stand it.
My holidays can begin now.
Yeah, no, I was already off early on Thursday morning. So well before Rafa's decision. Yeah, pre-booked holiday. Was going to go ahead regardless. So yeah, it's been lovely, lovely weather up here at the moment. I know it's been lovely in Wimbledon as well because Novak Djokovic was feeling the heat a little today. So hopefully, I think this weekend will certainly be nice. So don't think the roof will be in action for any of the finals unless they go really, really, really long for a strange reason. I don't know.
We're all set, it looks like, for a mini heat wave in London. So it should be glorious sunshine for finals weekend. But let's talk about those men's semi-finals. We did have one match that did take place today. That was Novak Djokovic versus Britain's Cam Norrie. Djokovic getting the job done eventually, winning in four sets, 2-6, 6-3, 6-2, 6-4, into his eighth Wimbledon final. I think now he's out on his own with a number of appearances in Grand Slam finals, reaching, I think, the number 32. So, yeah, it's another sort of record-breaking achievement in some respects, Kim. But at the same time, what was going on in that first set? Because it was not the Novak Djokovic we were expecting to walk out onto the tennis court.
No, exactly. When I missed the start of the match, and when I was looking at the live scores, I thought, what on earth is going on? What is Novak doing? Like, losing that first set 6-2, because, you know, I don't think anyone would have really expected.
He got broken three times.
Yeah, and really struggling to find rhythm, you know, way more unforced errors than we're used to seeing from Djokovic. Just not what you would expect to see from someone who is, you know, a very seasoned contender, you know, has won this title six times against, you know, Norrie, playing in front of home fans, first slam final ever. He would be the one to be having a lack of rhythm. But yeah, Norrie obviously did really, really well in that first set. Little sign of nerves, and got the job done 6-2. I think the way the match went after that was pretty much as expected, as I think we thought it was going to go from the very start. You know, three straight sets after that for Novak. He definitely, you know, upped his level, showed some great touch, and served a lot better. And yeah, you know, it kind of par for the course in the end, really.
And it wasn't down to a pep talk in the mirror this time, Kim. It was down to his magic hat, because he didn't play the first set with his hat on, but he put one on for the second set, and yeah, it all seemed to go much better. But no, as you said, it was very much an odd start for Djokovic. I know we've spoken many times, particularly in Grand Slam context, about him dropping the first set. But it was just surprising, I think, on this stage, at this time in the tournament, in the semi-finals. You would have thought that, yeah, it's understandable maybe in the first week, particularly when, you know, you might not have had any sort of warm-up event, you know, only played the odd match, and maybe there's a little bit of signs of rust and adaptation to the grass court. But I really wasn't expecting it coming into the, you know, the semi-final with so much on the line, particularly given, you know, Rafa's withdrawal yesterday. I would have been thinking something like, you know, Kyrgios has got a straight route into the final, hasn't been able to, or hasn't needed to step on court, so you know he's going to be fresh for that. So for Djokovic, I was thinking, I'm the better tennis player here, but I back myself given all my experience at Grand Slams versus Cam Norrie, who's in his first ever Grand Slam semi-final, and I would have been looking to get the job done as quick as possible, as few minutes on court as possible, so I can go ahead and focus my attention on Nick Kyrgios in the final.
Yeah, I mean, knowing that your opponent in the final has had like 3 to 4 almost days of rest, you obviously don't really want to, you know, get embroiled in a long five-setter for your semi-final. But, you know, in the end, it was 2 hours, 34 minutes, you know, pretty standard. It wasn't super long. I think, I know Novak went 5 in his quarterfinal against Sinner, but ultimately, time on court, he hasn't really had the most grueling schedule, I would say. I think, you know, we know he's supremely fit. And I think, you know, when he first came back after not playing, you know, really at the start of the year, he was sort of taking his time to get back up to full fitness. But he seems to be there now. So I don't think that's going to be a factor or a concern. And if anything, I mean, if Kyrgios does potentially have a shoulder issue, like a little niggle there, Djokovic is probably the one perhaps in better shape. You know, doesn't seem to have any physical ailments. But it's funny you mentioned the cap, actually, because I always feel that when Novak plays with a cap, he's less effective. But obviously today it was the opposite. he turned it around. So yeah, obviously helped today. But
probably the biggest sort of night and day difference I felt watching the match between that first set and the rest of the match was his serve. As I said, he was broken almost at ease and at will by Norrie in that first set three times. Yes, Djokovic did also break Norrie, but his serving was just not what I was expecting. But if you compare that to kind of sets 2, 3, and 4, his serving really was a lot better, particularly his first serve. It really, I think, got him out of trouble where you wondered if there was a little door opening of opportunity for Norrie. You know, I think I saw, you know, a few times when he had 15-30, love 30. But no, Djokovic's serve just was getting him some, you know, some free points. And also when he was going to the net as well, I mean, his touch at the net today I felt was exceptional at times, particularly on the half volley. There were just some shots that he made that I was just like, there are not many players who would be able to make that shot, but Novak Djokovic is one of them. And it was impressive to see, I think, him being able to kind of reset, recalibrate things. Yes, Cam Norrie can make it awkward and difficult for opponents to find their rhythm. And maybe, you know, Djokovic was feeling that in the first set. But certainly once he found his groove after an hour or so, it looked like the formality we were sort of expecting. And as much as I felt Cam Norrie was trying to G up the crowd to find inspiration, at the end of the day, I just don't think his execution on the court, it wasn't where it was needed to be to really, really push, you know, Djokovic to a place that maybe someone like a Jannik Sinner was able to do.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it was a perfectly respectable performance from Norrie. I think he certainly has been a credit to himself. And I mean, what he's done this tournament, reaching the semifinals is fantastic. So he should be, you know, super proud of what he's done. And, you know, it was obviously a very almost impossible task coming up against Djokovic really at Wimbledon at this stage. So I think, you know, he should hopefully go away feeling very proud of himself and not ruining any sort of super missed opportunities. I mean, it would have been fantastic if he'd have managed to like sneak a fifth set or something. You know, the crowd would have absolutely loved that, I'm sure. But, you know, it wasn't to be. Djokovic is into his eighth Wimbledon final. He's only lost one final here in his career. So chances are looking very strong for him to get another win. But, you know, we were wondering whether, well, this time yesterday, before Rafa announced his withdrawal, we were debating who it would be probably playing Novak in that final. But we now know it's Nick Kyrgios, because Rafa has, as we said earlier, withdrawn with the abdominal tear. I mean, a lot of people on social media sort of ruminating, oh, you know, we don't have two semi-finals now. That's such a shame for the tournament, for the fans. You know, what about the people who have paid hundreds of pounds to be there? They're only getting one men's semi. Put Taylor Fritz back in the draw. What do you make of that kind of opinion where people think that, you know, Rafa's opponent essentially from the quarterfinal should be allowed back in to the draw?
Yeah, I saw, you know, conversations and big debates about this. And I understand it from the, you know, the fan point of view, because it does feel like a kick in the teeth when, you know, you've got fans, you know, who've had these men's semi-final tickets for two, three years. You know, there have been spectators who've had those tickets been carried over from the Wimbledon that got cancelled due to the pandemic. So from that point of view, it does, yeah, feel like a shame that you're only going to get one men's semi-final match. And, you know, we don't actually get a lot of these, you know, situations. But at the same time, I do just think it's just unfair, I feel like, on the rest of the competition to say, Taylor Fritz, you know, you've lost your match against Rafa, don't worry, because he's withdrawn, you can come back into the tournament. For me, that feels like a very slippery slope, very messy situation to be in. And I just don't think there should be any sort of talk, really, of losers being able to be entered back into a main draw. It feels like a very definite situation we had at the end of that semi-final, in terms of Nadal won that match. Yes, he was injured, but he won that match. And anyone who's stepped foot on a tennis court, whether that's, you know, on the tour or even in your club, I think once that loss has happened, that's a finite thing. You know, that is an absolute sort of situation. And for me, because it's so absolute, I don't feel like it should be reversible, and Fritz should be allowed back in just because his opponent has withdrawn afterwards.
Yeah, I am in agreeance with you, Joel, because, I mean, if Taylor Fritz then went on to win the tournament, there would be massive question marks, wouldn't there? Asterisks. Oh, he shouldn't have even been there. And Fritz himself has said, after the match, that, he doesn't deserve to be in the tournament still. No. If he lost that match.
I love that he came out and said that, by the way.
I think that's a really good move on his part. And it's the truth. I mean, this is how a sport is played. Like, it doesn't always work out. It's not, perfectly going to go to form. And Rafa could very well have stepped onto that court in the semi-final and retired after a couple of games, in which case the fans have not had a match basically either in that situation. And then the schedulers of the tournament, they've got to suddenly fill the schedule really last minute. And, you could have, it's just, I think, sometimes these things do happen, but they don't happen very often. I think this is the first time in about 100 years almost at Wimbledon that someone has gone through into the final due to a walkover in the semi. So, it's once in a blue moon. And I think changing the rules to allow defeated opponents to come back in is just not really going to happen.
No, I don't think it should happen at, Grand Slams. I understand, it does happen at the, the tour finals, for example, in the round robin.
Yes.
Where a player doesn't feel like they're able to compete and the alternate comes in. And I understand it more in that situation because it's a round robin, start of the tournament, and there are schedules that need to be played. But certainly in Grand Slams, towards the end of the tournament, It just doesn't feel fair, does it? And I don't think competitors like Nadal, even when they're playing their match against Fritz and they feel injured, they don't want to retire or feel like, I don't feel like they should feel that pressure of, oh, but what do the, what will the fans think if I withdraw afterwards and they're, left disappointed by only having, one men's semi-final match? It shouldn't. They shouldn't have to think like that. They should be thinking about themselves. They should be thinking about competing to the absolute bitter end. And that's what we know, Rafa and his mentality. And it really should be about what the player wants to do. And if Rafa wants to show that, he can win a match being injured and, then withdraw, that's up to him. And I think it's up to the organisers to decide how do we combat that. But I don't think there should be any onus on a player to feel like, oh, I don't think I'm going to be able to play my men's semi-final, therefore I'm going to retire mid-match in my quarter-final, so spectators get a guaranteed two matches in the semi-final.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a very altruistic person who put, all those fans ahead of themselves.
I don't even think Roger Federer would do that. One of the most altruistic, I feel, people on the tour.
Also, sometimes, you feel terrible in that moment, but you think, well, after a day of rest, I might feel okay and be able to carry on. So in the moment, you think, I'll just get over the finish line here and we'll see how we are tomorrow. And see, Rafa did that and it still wasn't great, so he had to pull out. But yeah, I know we have lucky losers coming into the main draw. People have lost in qualifying and then they fill a slot in the main draw. So, I mean, you could argue that they do it for that. Why not later on in the tournament? But it's very unlikely. I mean, I don't think a lucky loser... Well, lucky losers have won tournaments, I think, but smaller tournaments on the tour. But obviously once in a blue moon again. Don't think it's ever happened at a slam.
But that's still like a jump from the qualifying draw to the main draw.
Still kind of two separate entities.
Yeah. And whereas here it's like it feels like a second life in the main draw, which doesn't feel fair. This is the main draw at an event is the it's the top level, and there should be, I feel like, no kind of compromises there. And again, I just think it's a very messy situation you could potentially get yourself into if you did allow players to come back into the tournament, because you'd just be opening up, I think, conversations on the integrity of letting players back in who have lost. And as you said, we've spoken about, I think, in the past, having asterisks and against people's players' names, champions' names, because of because of COVID or because of the players who were there or in the final. But you'd just be kind of opening up that conversation even more, I feel, if you added players back into the tournament. Could you imagine, Kim, a lucky loser asterisk winning, you know, a tournament? It just would be, it would just look very, very silly. And yeah, it doesn't feel right. And it doesn't feel like something, to be honest, it doesn't even feel like something I would even like, you know, I know how we joke about testing things at kind of like the next gen finals or something. It's not even something I would even consider testing, because it just, to me, is just so just not sport.
Yeah. And also, I mean, logistically, a lot of players just go home immediately after they lose. They get a flight quite soon after. Whereas, you know, you don't know if someone is always necessarily injured who you might lose to. You don't know what their plans or agenda are. Oh, they might suddenly pull out. I better stick around for 2 days just in case. I mean, that's just not plausible. And someone could suddenly develop something awful the night before their match out of the blue. And it's just, it's not really, yeah, I think there's enough. If you wrote a pros and cons list, there'd be a lot more cons than pros. But funnily enough, it did make me think back in the day. I can't remember what year this stopped happening. Someone with much more historic knowledge of tennis will have to help us out here. But they used to have it where the previous year's, you know, champion, the defending champion, only had to rock up like for the final, and they were just like automatically straight in the final, and everyone else,
oh, really?
Yeah, everyone else had to compete for the chance.
Well, that's testing my historical
to play
knowledge,
the defending champion. I mean, I think I learned about this in the Wimbledon Museum like many years ago. And I mean, they must have stopped doing this like way before the Open era. But I just think that's ridiculous, because you could literally keep winning Wimbledon but only play one match. It's just, and then the person you're playing in the finals had to go through like several rounds. I mean, I just can't believe that ever happened. But there we go. Let's look ahead to the men's final, because we do have Djokovic, Kyrgios. Lot of chat going around amongst Rafa fans about who they will be supporting in that final, because on one side, you know, you've got Djokovic going for his 21st Grand Slam title, and, you know, us Rafa fans, you know, our man's on number 22. Do we want Novak to get any more and be close to that? But on the other hand, you know, Novak Kyrgios, Nick Kyrgios is not probably Rafa fans' favourite personality.
He's not top of the Christmas card list, is
no,
he?
And I mean, even if you're not a Rafa fan, a lot of people aren't particularly a fan of Kyrgios. So, you know, a lot of people don't particularly want to see him winning anyway. So that's the, you know, debate.
I mean, just on that, because I think there was a newspaper headline today or yesterday I saw that was, is this Wimbledon's worst nightmare?
Yes, yeah.
Nick Kyrgios in the final. For example, hypothetical situation, Nick Kyrgios, Wimbledon 2022 men's champion, he's going to be in court next month. Is that a good look? Also, the number of fines he's obviously received this week, some of the statements he's been making in interviews on court and in the press room. You've got to think that there are probably people at Wimbledon, much like I feel like a lot of just general tennis fans, are just very divided. I mean, he's a very divisive person, isn't he? He's very Marmite. People love him, people hate him. And again, where do you think Wimbledon are thinking on Nick Kyrgios in terms of, yeah, it's exciting, him finally fulfilling on his talent and making a Grand Slam final for the first time. But at the same time, given all the things that have happened, are they secretly kind of hoping, please don't
cause a scene in the final.
Cause a scene. Exactly.
Don't lower the tone in a Wimbledon final. Yeah, I mean, I think that, I don't know this for sure, but I actually feel that Kyrgios is probably going to behave himself. I think he will hopefully appreciate the magnitude of the situation and realise that, you know, it's a moment that deserves and warrants a bit more respect. But I mean, that sounds silly me saying that, because just because it's a Wimbledon final doesn't mean you should respect the court or the staff anymore. Like, you should always respect the court and the staff. But I feel like he's probably is going to behave, unless he, I don't know, I feel like it's probably, we're expecting fireworks and drama and tantrums, and actually it might be a bit disappointing to some people because they want that.
I mean, Djokovic did say, you know, after his match against Norrie, that he expects there to be emotional fireworks, in his words, in the final, which was interesting because at the same time, you know, I think certainly if this match had happened maybe 2, 3, 4 years ago, and I think back then it was a different Nick Kyrgios in the sense, yes, we still see those outbursts, but I feel like he's sort of changed a little bit his perspective, and he has matured, I feel, not maybe like overly, but he's certainly, I think, changed over time. And certainly his relationship with Djokovic has also changed because, you know, he has spoken about the fact that their relationship is now, in his words, a bit of a bromance. And it's got to a point where actually they're messaging each other on Instagram DMs. I would love to see what those DMs are saying, but this feels quite far away from, you know, what we've seen before, I think, on particularly on Nick Kyrgios's Twitter, you know, tweeting things about Novak Djokovic and, you know, some of their past encounters. So from that kind of situation, I was a bit surprised to hear Djokovic say, yeah, I think there's going to be emotional fireworks on both sides, when, you know, Nick Kyrgios is saying, actually, it's all cool between us now. We're actually having a bit of a bromance. But I still think, you know, Kyrgios and Tsitsipas, they probably had a bit of a bromance going at some point, and now that has completely soured. So again, it could be the same situation.
Yeah, maybe that bromance will end in about 2 days' time. I mean, yeah, so Kyrgios has a winning record over Novak. The two matches that they played, they were in 2017. They were on hard courts. That was not, I think, a period of time where Djokovic was actually at his best. Things were not really great between these players. So things are different now. And it's a Grand Slam final, which always changes the situation. You know, it's very, very different playing, you know, over five sets on a scale like this. So I really don't see that head-to-head as being too significant, to be quite honest with you. And, you know, one thing I saw today, you know, Kyrgios said that when he found out that Rafa had withdrawn and that he was already into the final, he said he only got like an hour of sleep the night after. Mm. So last night, I guess that would have been. And, you know, that's not ideal. And, you know, he said he was feeling really nervous. And I mean, it's quite interesting that he's openly admitted that. And maybe it's going to, you know, clear and get out of his system before the final. But I don't know. I'm just, you know, what kind of Kyrgios are we going to see? And I know he's been in a doubles slam final before, you know, obviously won the Australian Open men's doubles this year. But singles is very different. And you know, his serve that's been working like so well this fortnight, is he going to be able to perform the way that we have seen him, you know, in the matches prior? And, you know, not to say that Djokovic is going to play lights out tennis. We've seen him get to slams and not be able to perform, you know, the US Open last year, for example. But that was very different. I think he was really going for history there, wasn't he, to try and do the calendar slam. So I think he's going to be a lot more relaxed in this final.
Yeah, this matchup is a classic sort of contrast between, you've got the Nick Kyrgios, the big server, against Novak Djokovic, one of the big returners of this generation. I mean, I watched him against Tim Van Rijthoven earlier on in the tournament, another guy who had a big serve under the roof, indoor court. You felt like it would have favored him, and Djokovic just really kind of took it apart. And, you know, for me, if Nick Kyrgios does want to win, he's going to not get nervous, hope that his first serve is firing. But as you said, I think this is a stage that he's never been on before. And I don't know how his personality is it going to gel with it? And, you know, when you've got someone like Djokovic returning your serves across the net, I don't know how, if Nick is going to get really frustrated at maybe the lack of free points he might get from, you know, his first serve that, you know, we've seen him get, you know, throughout the tournament. So surprise, surprise, he's going to need to handle himself and conduct himself in the right way, because as soon as he loses any sort of focus, I think Djokovic will kind of go in for the kill. And it could be a match that I think either goes that way, and it could be a very easy straight sets win for Novak Djokovic. But at the same time, if Kyrgios serve is firing and he doesn't kind of, I think, get embroiled, you know, with himself and starts monologuing, interacting with the crowd, gets on and focuses on his game, then I certainly think it could be a really close and tight affair. I think, yeah, it could go both. I genuinely think this match could go both ways.
Yeah, and I think there's almost a sort of love-hate situation going on. Some people don't really want this final. Maybe they're not keen on both players, but they're kind of intrigued and drawn to it regardless.
Intrigued, exactly.
So I don't know if I will be sitting in front of the telly sort of avidly watching, or I will be like refusing
That's
to
fine,
watch.
Kim, because I'll be messaging you on WhatsApp about it minute by minute.
I have a running commentary from you. I think intrigue is the word of the moment for this match. I mean, I do hope it's a good match, and I don't really want there to be any sort of awful circumstances, but you just have to sort of, you could never rule that out with Nick Kyrgios. He's always a certain amount of volatility when he steps on a tennis court. So it's going to be interesting. I know that's a really naff word to use. It's going to be interesting. For the same, the women's final is also going to be interesting, but for completely different reasons. So I do think we have got some less obvious finals perhaps coming up, which is good, and we'll get on to the women's final in the second half. But let's have a prediction, Joel. Who are you going to go with for your men's champion Wimbledon 2022?
I'm going to go with Nick Kyrgios.
Oh, you actually?
Yes, I'm going to go with Nick Kyrgios. I'm going to say Kyrgios in four sets.
Wow.
I think Novak Djokovic has shown this tournament, it's not just been the odd match, there's been a few times where he's dropped a set and has not played very good tennis. And I think Nick Kyrgios, I think he will rise to the occasion. I think he will really enjoy the moment. I personally don't think he's being nervous is going to be a factor. I know he said in his recent press conference that he had kind of nervous energy and he wasn't able to get to sleep. But I think that will be out of his system by the time of the final. I think he will really kind of enjoy it. As I said, I think he's matured and, I still expect to see the odd outburst. And maybe, that will be a tactic in terms of trying to get Novak Djokovic, similar to Stefanos Tsitsipas, trying to get Djokovic embroiled on a more emotional level. But I'm just going to go, I think we've seen some funny things this tournament, and I'm going to add Nick Kyrgios defeating Novak Djokovic in four sets to that list.
I mean, I concur in the sense that Djokovic hasn't been at his most sublime this tournament. He's dropped more sets than he would normally. But he's had some interesting opponents, to be fair, like Tim van Rijthoven. But
I want it to be emotion versus emotion, though. I think both these players play best when emotion is involved. And there's been, times where, they've been playing opponents where they've given them, no emotion, like Djokovic versus, Sinner, Kyrgios versus Nakashima. But I really hope in this match that there is some fuse that is lit for me personally and early on in the match, maybe in the first set or at the start of the second, that is really gonna kick things to overdrive. Because as soon as I think that emotion gets involved in both sides, all the crowd is going to be captivated and on edge, and I think we're going to be in for a really good tennis match.
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking back to Kyrgios' first round. He almost lost to Paul Jubb. This thing's going to be very different for him this tournament. And, Berrettini withdrew.
What, Paul Jubb? Paul Jubb
in the final. I'm not saying that. But, Berrettini was supposed to be in his section, withdrew. Rafa's withdrawn. He's had some luck. I'm not saying he doesn't deserve to be there. Although I do think it would have been interesting with Rafa. I think Rafa would have been playing well enough to have come past him in the semi. I don't know, although I predicted Kyrgios to win, didn't I? But that's only because of the injury. And I would have loved to have seen Rafa had a crack at Novak in the final, because I think Rafa's level isn't as good as when they played 3 years ago, and Rafa narrowly lost that. So it would have been really interesting. However, it's not the way it has panned out. And I'm going to go with Djokovic, though. I think Djokovic will win in five sets.
Ooh,
If it goes five, it goes crunch time, Novak's winning.
I mean, they've both got great five set records. I think Kyrgios hasn't lost in five sets at Wimbledon. So it's really interesting. But it's interesting because of any which way it could go, because that Djokovic could also if he's got his returning game ready to go from point one, and it'll be interesting, I think, to see how, you know, those early service games in the match, to see how Djokovic is handling that Kyrgios serve. It could be lights out for Kyrgios very, very early on if Djokovic is just able to read that, you know, easily, get Kyrgios frustrated, not being able to do what he wants to do.
I think also Novak has the capacity to obviously just pull out of performance, totally winning champion's performance, and nail him in three sets. And we have seen, you know, players beat Novak in slam finals like Medvedev or Stan, you know, back in the day. But both of those occasions, Novak was going for something for the first time, like his first Roland Garros, you know, and, you know, doing the calendar slam. This time, he's not really, yes, he's going to for 21 slams to be like one closer to Rafa. And also people are saying, you know, if he can't play in New York, can't play in Australia next year, it's going to be a while before he gets another crack at a Grand Slam. Mm. But I think that Novak will be calmer than those situations where people or first time finalists have managed to beat him in slam finals. So I'm still going to go with him.
There's some parallels, aren't there, between, you know, this final and the final last year, because he came up against another big server.
That's true.
You know, with a big forehand in Berrettini, and, you know, was able to eventually again get it done. You know, won in four sets, and he dropped the first set. So, you know, there are parallels there. But yeah, I'm going to go for a different outcome here, and I think we're going to get a very rare non-big three Grand Slam champion.
Wow, especially at Wimbledon, that is very much a rarity. I can't remember the last time a non-big four person won Wimbledon. I mean, who would it have been? I can't even think.
Ivan Isevich? Leighton Hewitt? Andy Roddick?
It would have been before Federer. Has it been 20 years since a big four hasn't won Wimbledon?
Exactly.
Wow.
Got to break that streak, Kim. We've got to break that streak.
My lord. Okay, right. Let's take a quick break now. We'll be here all night talking about these two. do join us in the second half, everyone, where we'll be having a look back on the women's semi-finals and previewing the women's finals at the championships. So do not go anywhere. Welcome back to our Wimbledon semi-finals catch-up, sponsored by local tennis leagues. And now we're going to move on to looking back on the women's semi-finals from Thursday. Let's start with Elena Rybakina against Simona Halep, which was the second semi-final. This did not go the way I was expecting, Joel. I was so sure Halep was going to just come through quite comfortably in straight sets, as she has been doing. You know, I really thought she was, like, had honed herself into another champions, you know, performance, and would definitely, you know, reach the final. I was quite confident, but yeah, it was not her day. She was not having a very good day on serve, 9 double faults, which was a lot. And yeah, Rybakina was very focused. Her serve was very much on point. And she just out-hit Simona Halep. And Simona Halep, you know, has been playing really well. So Elena Rybakina, she surprised me. And I think she surprised a lot of people with that performance.
No, I agree. Because we were just talking about, is this going to be Anna Samova 2.0 in the ladies' semi-final? Yeah, I was reading some comments from Halep's coach, Muratoglu, about kind of the reason for the defeat. And, you know, he was talking about, quite interestingly, about the fact that she's played a lot of tennis. You know, she's played four straight weeks, I think, of grass court tournaments. And perhaps it caught up to her a little bit. And although, you know, she had, you know, had the tools, I think, to beat Rybakina in the semi-finals, she was just, you know, emotionally spent and didn't have the kind of mental effort and energy to apply herself, I think, to the proposition of Rybakina across the net from her. You know, having said that, Rybakina played a great game. It's just a very, very, very tricky opponent. You know, she is in that mold of, I know we spoke about Anna Samova, but, you know, thinking about past Wimbledon ladies champions, she is in that mold of like a Petra Kvitova or a Garbiñe Muguruza in terms of that ball and how hard she strikes it. And you're always going to be dangerous, aren't you, Kim, with that sort of game when it is on. If it's off, it can get away from you very quickly. But, and I think, you know, Anna Samova showed that. But at the same time, when you come up against someone who played, for me, an inspired level of tennis in the semi-final, and she needed to, I think, against, you know, Halep, who, you know, was coming in with very, very good momentum. Yeah, she was just leathering the ball. And, you know, it's hard to deal with, I think, particularly when it starts with the serve. Despite, you know, Halep is a very, very good returner, but it's hard to stop that right back in the serve and do what you want to do with it, you know, from the returner point of view. So decent win for her, but perhaps a little bit unexpected as well.
Yeah, and I think it was her first time on centre court. All her matches, you know, previously had, well, either been court one or another court. So she handled the occasion very well. And I think we were all sort of expecting her to falter in the second set. You know, she was a set and a break up, and you kind of, there was a few erratic, like,
shots.
Nervy. Yeah.
Did get a bit nervy,
didn't
it?
Little bit of nerves, but she managed to kind of rein that in and pull it together. And you know, it was in the end very, very calm and composed, which I think, you know, you've got to be if you're in these situations in a Grand Slam for the first time. So I was very impressed by her demeanor and her poise. And she said, you know, afterwards that she was trying very, very hard to just be very mentally strong and stable. And, you know, she's into her first Grand Slam final, first player representing Kazakhstan to be in this position. I mean, what I find very interesting is the fact that, you know, she was born in Russia. She lives in Russia. Well, that's her official residence. She moved to represent Kazakhstan, I think, in 2018, because essentially the federation were offering her, you know, more money, funding. So I do wonder if Rybakina is to win tomorrow, if, you know, how much is going to be made of her Russian background and heritage, whether Wimbledon are thinking, oh no, like, people are going to be thinking it's very ironic that essentially a Russian has won Wimbledon despite the ban.
I mean, I my impression is the role that Russia played in Rybakina getting to the final in the loosest sense possible is, we didn't back her and give her any funding to a point that she was like, well, I'm off to Kazakhstan because they're going to offer me lots more support. But no, I think in all seriousness, now, I think she's, I think I was reading in an interview, she's a bit sick and tired of all these kind of questions being raised about her, you know, her heritage. Yes, it is a talking point. It's going to continue to be a talking point. Kim, the talking point, though, for me that is the most interesting, though, is her record in finals. It's not very good. She's lost, I believe, her last four finals. So I think there's going to be big question marks in terms of being able to play her game on the biggest stage of all. And yes, it will be a battle against another first-time finalist in Ons Jabeur. But she is a player who I don't think has any of that nervous energy that maybe Rybakina and Nick Kyrgios share. So for me, that is the bigger talking point, particularly in regards to the match. You know, coming up, is how does she block all those finals and ending up as the runner up out of her mind and go into that match firmly believing that I've got a chance of becoming a Grand Slam champion?
Yeah, I think she's only won two WTA titles, but has certainly been in something about like eight finals. So a bit of a Felix Auger-Aliassime situation, kind of. In the sense of, you know, not the great record.
It's not that bad yet, but it's certainly getting there.
Prove me wrong, Elena. Go on. But yeah, she will be playing Ons Jabeur in the final, because Ons Jabeur came through against Tatiana Maria in three sets. It was 6-2, 3-6, 6-1. So obviously, you know, these two are very, very good friends. They know each other very well. And, you know, it's an entertaining match for a bit. But ultimately, you know, Ons Jabeur came out very, very strong finish to the match. And, you know, we didn't really look back at the start of that third set. although, you know, Tatiana Maria, she's battled through her last two matches. You know, she's very much a used to playing a long three set match. So you did think when it went to that third, oh, was she going to come back again? but yeah, not this time.
No, exactly. And I think what was interesting for, you know, Jabeur was that, yes, we all know about her kind of variety, particularly her kind of slice game. But I noticed watching it on TV, the slice backhand, I mean, it was just kind of used exclusively by Tatiana Maria. She doesn't really have a double-handed backhand. Whereas Jabeur does possess that slice backhand, but she can also hit flat on the double-hander. And I felt just attacked by attacking that backhand wing of Maria. a lot of the shots that were coming back were very floaty, very kind of in the middle of the court, there to be hit. And that is when I felt Jabeur could turn to her double-handed backhand to really kind of assert her authority on the point. And I think that was one of the reasons, particularly in that first set, why, you know, she almost kind of overpowered, I think, Maria to kind of begin with. Yes, Maria did kind of fight back in that second set and Jabeur went a little bit off the boil, but it just sort of proved, I think, to be a momentary blip. And she really kind of ran away with it in that third set. And Kim, you just can't not be happy, I feel, for Jabeur, because she's such a crowd pleaser. Everyone seems to love her. She, I think, has won the most matches on the WTA Tour aggregated over the last two seasons. She's, you know, she's in form at the moment, and you know, she's just a crowd pleaser. I just don't feel like, unlike, you know, Nick Kyrgios and Novak Djokovic in the, you know, in the men's final, I just don't feel like she has any detractors at the moment.
Yeah, and I mean, she hasn't lost a match since that first round defeat at Roland Garros. You know, she won Birmingham. She you know, she's very comfortable on the surface. She's playing great. She's very likable. She's, you know, made a lot of inroads, you know, of late over the last few seasons. If you know, going back, she's, you know, at her highest ranking now. She's, you know, number two in the world. Now a Grand Slam finalist. You know, she's making history for her country. You know, she's the first Tunisian and first African woman to get to a Slam final, first Arab player to do that as well. So all these like milestones. And you know, she's sort of talked at length about how she'd love to have, you know, more people from Africa, you know, from the Middle East to get playing tennis, to get to these situations. I mean, obviously, Joel, you know, you're a massive Malik Jaziri fan, so perhaps he'll be inspired by Jabeur's run, and you know, well, he'll be the next one.
Well, it's fascinating you say that, because do you remember when, obviously, you know, Lee Na got to a Grand Slam final the first time, and, you know, TV viewing figures went completely off the charts in China, and tennis, I felt, was really elevated in that country, you know, ever since. And it feels like this, again, is one of those opportunities where, with kind of not just kind of Tunisia, but as you said, Middle East, Africa, really kind of putting, you know, tennis on the map in a part of the world that, you know, has had, you know, past players who have done well and have applied their trade on, you know, at the top level, both on the, you know, the ATP and WTA tours. But I'd be really interesting to see the, you know, the TV viewing figures for this match, given it feels like it could be a historic occasion for someone like Ons Jabeur if she was going to go on and win the title.
I mean, it will be a historic occasion for both players, as well. I mean, whoever wins, because obviously they're both going for their first Grand Slam, but they're also the first player from their countries, or representing their countries, to win. You know, they would be the first player to win a Slam title as well. So regardless, we're going to have kind of a first. And you know, they have played, I think, a couple of times before. They've got a win each, but they haven't played, I think, since last year in Dubai, where Jabeur won. So I kind of feel, when I'm looking ahead to tomorrow's final, I think it could be a close match, but ultimately the one thing that gives me, or not gives me the edge, but gives Jabeur the edge, I should say, is I think her variety. I think she will be able to deal with Rybakina's perhaps more one-dimensional game, and when push comes to shove,
like Simona Halep did.
Well, yeah, I just feel that, you know, Jabeur's got a lot more variety, and I think that when you kind of in these situations, she's got a plan B if things are, you know, if she's up against the wall, and I think Rybakina, yeah, she's got a big serve, great ground strokes, a lot of power, but we know that game is perhaps more likely to self-combust if she's not hitting the lines, if she's not getting her first serve in. I think Jabeur's got a more reliable game. And so my edge goes to Ons Jabeur.
I would say it could be quite a topsy-turvy one. I don't expect it to be at all straightforward. I think there were going to be momentum shifts throughout the match, go one way then the other. But I certainly think at the end of the day, yeah, I hope Jabeur wins. I mean, this match, Kim, is, as you said, a match between first-time finalists. And I think also I read it's the first match, or it's one of the first matches in ladies' finals where it doesn't involve a player from the continent of Europe or North America, United States. And again, for me, it's fascinating how, you know, we've ended up with this final. Maybe you would have potentially have seen, scouted on Jabeur at the start of the tournament, maybe to go all the way. But yeah, for me, the appeal is the fact that we've got two players from tennis playing nations that seem to be on the up, or representing tennis playing nations on the up. And it really, I think, could do a lot in terms of opening up the sport to, you know, other parts of the world. And from that perspective, I'm sort of hoping on Jabeur wins, because I think if she does it, I think we would maybe see the ripple effect greater than, say, if Rybakina won. But I think it will be a close affair. But yeah, I think it'll come down to how well Rybakina can deal with, for example, the drop shots, you know, the slice, being low to the ground. You know, her movement, I think, is going to be very much under the microscope by Jabeur. And whether Jabeur can, you know, execute her game, because there are times, particularly in that semi, where she wasn't able to do that. Yes, she was able to kind of refocus and reset herself. But yeah, I think there are a few questions on both sides.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I would say against John Jabeur is the fact that she will be feeling the pressure more, the expectation as the higher seed.
I think she loves it, though.
Yeah, I think she's really reined in the kind of nervousness that we've seen from her, like, years gone by. I think she's really got on top of that. But, you know, this is obviously new territory for them both. So I think they're both likely to feel nerves. So I don't know. I just feel that maybe on Jabeur, as the favourite, essentially, is perhaps going to be feeling that expectation more, you know, whereas Rybakina, probably in her mind, you know, needs to think of herself as the underdog and just think, I need to just go for it. And I think if Rybakina plays lights out tennis and, you know, it's on point, I think she's got the potential to, like, win in straight sets. But I think if the match goes longer, if it goes to three, I definitely would favour Jabeur. I think she's got a really good three set record. I think she leads the tour in the terms of three set matches won, and also just matches won generally, as you said. So I think, yeah, again, I think Jabeur
In three or two?
I think I might go two, actually. But I think it could be a sort of 6-4, 7-6 job, potentially. Could have a tie break.
Interesting.
I hope it's a great final.
I don't think that. I'm thinking Jabeur in three, and I think it's going to be like 6-2, 2-6, 6-2, okay. or something. Something like that. I do think there's going to be... I think I'm expecting a final where there's going to be the majority of time one player is going to be playing better or on top of their opponent than both players playing well at the same time, and we get a really great spectacle. Maybe I hope to be proved wrong, but yeah, I always feel like with those clash of styles, sometimes, yeah, it's more of like, I'll figure you out, then you figure me out, and it's sort of a bit of a to and throw approach, as opposed to like they combine and mesh and great tennis is played as a result.
Yeah, and I think I don't know. It is. I'm quite pleased with the final that we've got, actually, because I think it is. It is. You know, a clash of styles again, and I think, you know, similar to perhaps the men's final. You know, and I think it's kind of a breath of fresh air as well. I mean, perhaps you could say that about all the women's finals at the moment. It's, you know, different players every time, but I think also it's the first time that we've actually had two new Slam finalists at Wimbledon. Because obviously a lot of Wimbledon the last however many years has been dominated by the Williams sisters. And obviously last year, we, you know, Ash Barty and Pliskova had both been in a Slam final. So I think it's actually a while since we've had two new Slam finalists at Wimbledon. So I think, you know, maybe some of the typical Wimbledon crowd won't know these players, but I hope we get a good match, obviously.
I mean, again, Kim, there are parallels there, aren't there? With the final last year. Barty, Variety,
yep.
Pliskova, big serve, flat, baseline. So it's like it's similar sort of styles, isn't it, to last year? Just sort of new names on the scoreboard.
Hopefully we won't have as painful a start to the match as we did last year with Pliskova going like 5-love down.
Oh, yes.
I remember watching that, and she just couldn't get a ball in court, you know, to start the match. Yeah. It was not pleasant, but, you know, she took it to three sets. In the end, it was all right.
That was so impressive. Yeah. The fact that happened, but Yeah, it's yeah, I'll be interested. But yeah, I'm gonna go Jabeur in three.
Okay. I'm gonna go for Jabeur as well. So Jabeur and well, we're split on the men, but we're in agreement on the women. I think one match that is probably going to go five sets is the men's doubles final though, Joel, which is tomorrow as well. And that's Mektić and Pavic, second seeds against Ebden and Purcell, the 14th seeds from Australia. So that will follow Rybakina and on Jabeur. Now, I was not very pleased yesterday with the first men's doubles semi-final because, unfortunately, Joe Salisbury and Rajiv Ram lost from two sets up, five match points. And some of those match points, they really should have. I mean, they hit a double fault on one of them. I think Rajiv hit a forehand like long as well on another. So, and then it just, you know, they kind of got whooped in the end in that final set. So I was just thinking, oh, what an opportunity missed, as I'm sure they were. But yeah, we've got, I think that doubles final will be, I think it'll be quite a close one. Mektić and Pavic came through in a fifth set against Cabal and Farah yesterday. So they've played quite a lot of tennis. I mean, Matt Ebden's played a lot of tennis because he was also in the mixed doubles final, which went the way of his opponent, actually, which was, fortunately for Britain, Neil Skupski and Desiree Korjic. They won it last year. They've defended their title. So I think it's the first time in, I think, about 25 years that someone has defended a mixed doubles at Wimbledon.
Really impressive.
So really good stuff.
I was straight sets.
Yeah, very pleased.
Straight sets in the final. Mm. And you know, Kim, I'm a massive Sam, as all our listeners know, I'm a massive Sam Stosur fan.
So, he gutted.
Truly gutted her and Ebden. No, it was unfortunate for them. But yeah, Skupski and Korjic just played better on the day. And Kim, just to add to that, Cabal Farah, Mektić Pavic, I was telling you before we started recording, is that not the most quintessential Grand Slam doubles semi-final match? The only thing that could have made it more quintessential was it going to a last set tiebreak in the fifth set. And lo and behold,
it did. No, I mean, the men's doubles, because we still play best of five at Wimbledon. It's the only slam that they still do that for the men's doubles. It's, you know, it does bring up these very close epics.
I mean, Kim, Ram and Salisbury would have been in the final if it was best of three.
In that case, it should be best of three. No, I mean, we've also got the wheelchair action going on. Alfie Hewitt had a really good semi-final today, came from a set down to beat Gustavo Fernandez. So he's into the men's singles wheelchair final. Him and Gordon Reid are also playing at the moment as we're recording in the doubles. De Groot and Van Coot, Joel, are also in proceedings, you'll be pleased to know. I think they're scheduled in their semi tomorrow. So we'll update everything from that side on Sunday. And the women's doubles is also, we've got Siniaková and Krejcikova in the women's doubles final, which will take place on Sunday. And Collins, Krejcik, Zhang and Mertens are in a third set at the moment. So Krejcik still on potentially to win two titles.
Yeah, I will say, just on that wheelchair singles match with Alfie Hewitt, watched a little bit of it early on number one court. I thought it was a very smart move by Wimbledon to put it on number one court. I think it was great showcase for wheelchair tennis. It was a great match, went 3 hours plus. And yeah, really, really dramatic stuff. And I know there was been calls earlier in the week about the fact that players feeling disappointed. I think Alfie Hewitt particularly called it out that, you know, the wheelchair tennis is still out on those outside courts. And I do think, you know, Kim, we are entering more of a, you know, a change, I think, particularly with disability tennis and the fact that, yeah, I think it should get its day on a show court, not just on the outside court. So, you know, from that perspective, I think it was really like long overdue, actually, that they were out on number one. And again, it was just a great showcase, I think, for the event. I think, you know, there'll be some people say that, yeah, it only was there because, you know, they had a spot to fill on center and the ladies doubles went on there and everything got kind of shifted. But I hope the kind of organizers look at this in the future and just show that there is appetite there beyond just putting it out on an outside court. And I hope that in the future it can be incorporated more into the show court schedule.
Yeah, because a lot of the time it's kind of exposure, isn't it? People would enjoy it and would watch it, but they're just not exposed to it because it's never put on prime time, you know, mainstream courts and everything. So yeah, definitely, hopefully it's helped boost the visibility and the profile, because it was a fantastic match, and you know, absolutely no reason why it shouldn't be. So you know, we wish Alfie here all the best for the final, and yeah, we'll be rounding up everything, a bit of juniors as well going on obviously with the finals over the weekend, so we'll be back on Sunday to round all the action up, to lament a potential disruption in the men's final. I really don't know what's going to happen there. It could be an absolute cracker.
What are we going to talk about? I don't know. Yeah. But we'll find out. We'll find out by Sunday. Listeners, I hope you enjoyed listening to this semi-finals catch-up with Tennis Weekly. Remember to subscribe to us on whatever device you listen to us on to stay up to date on all the action to come over finals weekend at Wimbledon. We are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all good podcasting platforms out there. You can also listen to us on the DownloadTennis.com app. And if you like what you're hearing, then make sure to leave us a rating and comment on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
And you can follow us on social media. We're available on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Tennis Weekly Pod. So don't forget to give us a like and a follow if you don't already. And let us know any questions or feedback that you may have for us as well. If you prefer, you can do this via email by emailing us on tennisweeklypod@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out our website as well, www.tennisweekly.co.uk.
And listeners, we will be back on Sunday at Tennis Weekly HQ to catch up on all the finals action at Wimbledon. So I hope you can join us for that. But in the meantime, it's goodbye from Kim.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. We will see you again soon.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.